You select two, the new one, to light the candle and incense. Huh? Oh, envy. Okay, we can get ready for puja. So today is the 4th, 4th of July, 2019, Thursday class. No, cause see now. You're in the kitchen. Your kitchen. Then you can get Lei Yong to light, help to light the candles. They have the offerings. Yeah, the rest of us can stand, today is Sunday, Can? Yeah? If you all want to, no problem. Help to light the candle and the incense. The flame is very strong. Okay, Sadhu, 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 sadh Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, you can be seated. Then we shall do the puja chanting. Let us compose our mind. Develop the faith, sadha, virya. Then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang namami. Okay, you can miss it that. Then turn to page one of your chanting book. We will chant the Vandana onward. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo Sa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Buddhang Saranang Gacchami Dhammang Saranang Gacchami Sanghang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami Patiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Kamesu micacara วิรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาวิรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจาปะมาดัตตานะเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิ Now we will chant the Padipa Puja offering of light. Ganna sarpaditena dipena tamadangsina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang.Ganda sambarayutena dopenahang suganghina pujaye pujaniyantang puja bhajanamutamang vanna ganda gunopetang etang kusumasantatinPujayami Munindasa Siripada Sarorohe Pujemi Buddhang Kusumena Nena Punnena Matena Chahotu Mokang Pupang Milayati Yata Idang MeKayo tata yati vinasabhavang Adivase tuno bante Paniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatumutamang Adivase tuno bantePale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamangNow you are chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water.May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One.Who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers.May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits,Born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculty of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception. especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now we pay respect, Tripa Jam. Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you can be seated. Just relax body and mind. Then we can have half an hour of silent awareness meditation. Yeah? Oh, okay. Okay, so there are two new people, right? Joanne, you meditate before? Oh, good. What type of meditation? Yeah? Oh, did you do any metta or any type of? Chanting. Oh, vipassana. Your object of meditation is what? Rising, falling on the abdomen. Okay, that will make the thing easier. At least you have done it before. Eh? So sadhu to you. Eh? So you're most welcome to join us. So I will give you some simple explanation. Then later on you can have your meditation. Then when you finish, if you got any question, you can ask. The question can cover whatever question you want to ask on meditation and the teaching, the Buddha Dhamma. And also how to apply this teaching to help you understand life and overcome whatever life problem you may have. Okay. I will set the alarm now. Half an hour. Okay. We need to have clear understanding of what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Because if you cannot understand what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, then it's very difficult for you to do the meditation without understanding. Meditation must be developed or cultivated with understanding. So the essence of the Buddha's teaching, as we all know, is the Four Noble Truths. And these are noble truths that can make you enlightened beings or noble ones. So within the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth talks about the realities of life and existence. Everything that you want to know within the existential world, the eight realities that can lead to suffering when you don't have this understanding of his teaching. Then the second noble truth is very beautiful. It explains to you clearly the cause behind all your suffering. And the main cause is craving, conditioned by your self-delusion or ignorance. Then the third noble truth is very beautiful. He said, suffering need not be if you have the understanding of his teaching. So there is a noble truth that explains clearly to you how suffering can end, the cessation of suffering. And you can realize this enlightenment, which is Nibbana in the here and the now, before you die. So this is very assuring. That's why we want to meditate this, because we can realize this state of enlightenment. Then you can understand life beautifully and live the noble life of enlightened being. Your mind states will be very beautiful. Your life will be very, very rewarding, wonderful and beautiful. Then you will appreciate life. You will have a lot of joy, a lot of inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness and understanding. That's the reason why the Dhamma is so beautiful. Yeah. So enlightenment in the here and the now can free your mind from all suffering. And when you can have that type of life, you really understand life and you can really live life to the fullest. Mm. Then the fourth noble truth is what the meditation is. Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha said there is this fourth noble truth that explained clearly to us. If you cultivate this noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. That's why this is the meditation. Mm. But before we go into this noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha said you must develop certain qualities in life. These are what he calls spiritual faculties. Without these spiritual faculties, you cannot understand his teaching. So he said there are five spiritual faculties. They are basically, as you all know, Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. Sadda is faith in the Buddha and his teaching. The faith comes about through understanding how unique the Buddha is, how special a being he is, and how wonderful his teaching is. The Buddha is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened, perfect in wisdom and virtue. You can say he is the wisest and the most virtuous human being ever to arise. And because of that, he understands life completely, clearly. And he is able to summarize all his understanding into the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of his teaching. And this Four Noble Truths is very important because this is the essence of his teaching. Yeah. And when you understand his essence, you can become enlightened beings. So in life, if you can have this type of teaching, you should have gratitude towards the Buddha, very strong faith towards the Buddha. Then you should diligently arise the virya, the second spiritual faculty, to cultivate his teaching. Because this teaching can liberate your mind, free your mind, and bring about enlightenment in the here and the now, so that you need not suffer anymore. Mm. So this virya will drive you to cultivate a very important spiritual faculty which the Buddha called sati, or mindfulness. So our purpose here is to train our mind to develop this sati, or mindfulness. Then when we are able to develop it, it will help us understand clearly what the Buddha's teaching is all about, his essential Dhamma. Because without sati, you cannot meditate. Without sati, you cannot understand his teaching. So the Buddha used to explain, for sati is life. Without sati, you are heedless. And the heedless are as if dead. So Dhammapada verse 21 is very clear. The Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So you need to have this quality of mind, heedfulness. And even before his parinibbana, he also re-emphasized and reminded the monks, the bhikkhu. He said his last word, strive on with heedfulness. Appamadena sampadeta. So we need to understand what is this heedfulness all about. Heedfulness has two parts according to Dhammapada verse 23. The constantly meditative and ever mindful has heedfulness. So the first part is you must have mindfulness, then you stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then when you are able to be ever mindful in the midst of life, you can start your meditation. you can start to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. You combine these two, you become heedful. So what we do here is we train our mind to be aware first, mindful. Then we stabilize it by either anchoring it to one of the objects of meditation, which the Buddha taught, which can be Anapanasati, or the four posture, or Sati Sampajana, or any other method, technique, or skillful means that you have developed on your own. So this understanding is very important. When you are able to develop this sati, stabilize it, then you have to go in deep until your mind enters sati to realize pasati, the tranquility of mind or stillness of mind. Not until your mind can enter pasati, you don't stand a chance at all. You can never be mindful in the midst of life. Because for you to be heedful in the midst of life, you have to be ever mindful to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So pasati is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, your meditative mind, your true mind. You cannot develop this in the form of meditation. You don't stand a chance when you come out into society or when you are back to your lay life. So this training is very important. And that stability of mindfulness, when you stabilize it, it will develop into pasati. Pasati is what I mentioned just now. The tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind. Then you can realize your true mind without thought. You have to meditate with that silent mind, that meditative mind. Otherwise, you will never develop the progress. So this is basically the framework that you need to understand. Then after that, when you realize pasati, your meditation will progress very fast and you will understand things very fast. Then when you come out of your meditation, everything you do, you are aware, you are mindful. Because when you realize pasati, it means your mind has entered sati. You have realized your true mind without thought. And you are able to understand what that nature is. Yeah. And this is most important. Okay, then after you have developed pasati, it will stabilize and become samadhi. Samadhi can be in the midst of life. Samadhi means the unwavering and collected mind. At the moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel or think of something, your mind is collected and unwavering. It does not stir, it does not react. This will enable you to see things as they are. That's how the fifth spiritual faculty of Panya arises. Wisdom, leading to right understanding, right view. And this is the basis of meditation. All meditation start with right view. Noble Eightfold Path, first path factor is right view. So all this, you need to develop the understanding. The other very important understanding that the Buddha mentioned is, why are you not peaceful, the Buddha said. The reason a lot of people cannot meditate is because they have not trained their mind to develop the spiritual faculties. When the five spiritual faculties of Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya are not there, the opposite five mental hindrances will arise. This mental hindrance will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's the reason why you cannot meditate. So the mental hindrance are the cause of your inability to be peaceful, to be aware. You tend to think a lot. You tend to easily become heedless, lost in thought. the mental hindrance are very strong, make you heedless. The most powerful one is, of course, restlessness of mind, born of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. When you have problems in life, your mind is not calm. Your mind is restless. It has fear, it has worry, it has anxiety. Then because you have not trained your mind, your spiritual faculty are not there. Throughout the day, when you live life, when you experience a sense experience, like you see something or hear something or smell something, you tend to stir your mind, react. Pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. You have your like and dislike. So all these are the sensual desire and ill will, the first mental hindrance. If throughout the day you are so heedless, reacting to sense experience, the mental hindrance are there. They become so rampant, so powerful, until you develop it as habitual tendency. When it becomes habitual tendency, you develop latent tendency, anusaya, and they become very strong in you. That's why you cannot free your mind, you cannot bring about the meditative state. Then this defilement, they are very strong. They become like asava. Like every time trying to surface, erupt, and stir your mind and cause you suffering, misery. These are called kilesa. They are very powerful in the deluded living being. So the purpose of our meditation is either we develop the spiritual faculty to overcome them, so that when we come here to meditate, our mind is naturally peaceful, automatic, sati will be there. Faith, the spiritual faculty of sadda, will make you calm and composed. Virya will give you the energy so that you are not sleepy. Then sati will silence your mind. You will develop awareness or mindfulness without thought. When you can be in the state of sati, you will experience beautiful mind state. You will experience calmness leading to piti, then sukhang or blissfulness of mind. Then you continue to relax and silent. You will develop pasati leading to samadhi. That's how you're supposed to develop your training. But for those who still have not developed the spiritual faculty and the hindrance are still there and you want to meditate, you can still meditate, but you have to develop some form of skillful means to temporarily keep the mental hindrance at bay. So what I usually teach is the mind sweeping method combined with metta. So this one, you can read them out, is available in the transcript book. So I just briefly go through it, then after that I will let you meditate. Mind sweeping method is very simple. It's to help you decondition your heedless thinking. So you just relax body and mind, silence your mind completely. Make sure you have a straight backbone. Then relax. Silence your mind completely. Then just breathe in, breathe out naturally. Then close your eye if you can. Then feel your forehead. Just feel, don't think, feel, and relax into it. Wherever there is any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, just feel it soothingly. Relax, relax, and relax. Then you sweep it down to your eye muscle. Do the same. Relax into them. Then your facial muscle, do the same, each and every strand. Feel, relax. Because you just feel and relax, there is no more thinking. It will make you more quiet, more peaceful, more calm. That's how it deconditions your heedless thinking. It's a new way of training your mind. Then in order to help you relax further, visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. where you can radiate a radiant, radiant smile, there is joy. And because there is joy, your facial muscle will relax naturally. Yeah. Then you can radiate loving kindness or metta to yourself to bring about inner well-being. The mind sweeping method can bring about inner peace. The metta can bring about inner well-being. You can recite, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You can feel your entire body and mind, all of the cells within, having this well-being and happiness. Yeah. Each and every of these cells, yeah, having well-being and happiness. Then may it too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within your own hearts. This metta you can continue to radiate. After you radiate to yourself, you can radiate to your loved ones. They can be your parents, your good friend, your brother, sister, your colleague, or special acquaintance and other things, even your own children. Then after that, you can also radiate to all beings within this vicinity of Brother Suyan and Mifong's house, including all Kayamita, non-human, Dharma protectors, Devas, all beings, known and unknown, seen and unseen. Wish them all the same. May they all too be well and happy, well and happy. Then you continue. Then after that, you can extend it to all beings within the whole of Subang Jaya, Petaling Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, and our planet, Mother Earth. Then all beings within our solar system, extending to all beings within our galaxy, Milky Way. Finally, all beings throughout the entire universe, you radiate the same. May all beings within the entire universe or the whole of the existence be well and happy, well and happy. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm, more peaceful. Then you bring your attention back to your facial muscle, feel, relax. Then you sweep it down to your shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, do the same, feel, relax, back to shoulder. Then you bring it to your heart area, feel, relax. If you can detect any vibration or your heartbeat at your heart area, you just silence everything and stay there. If you are new, if you have not trained, if you are not able to have that type of mindfulness or sensitivity, then you don't have to do it. You just feel your heart area like you feel your forehead. Whatever tension or stress within, you just relax into it, feel it soothingly, relax, relax and relax. Then you sweep it down to your stomach, silence your mind, feel, relax. Then you move it down to your abdomen, silence your mind, feel, relax. If you are doing the rising and falling of the abdomen, this is your object of meditation. You don't go and look for the rising and falling, you silence your mind completely and just feel the abdomen. Let the phenomenal come to your silent mind. When your silent mind can detect the movement, That is real sati, mindfulness. So stay with that movement, the awareness and the movement move as one, just like anapanasati. The breath and the awareness move as one. When you are able to be mindful without thought, there is sati. Then you continue to do, but you are not doing that type of meditation with that type of object of meditation. Then you can just skip it. Move to your leg, feel, relax. Then buttock, feel, relax. Then you can reverse this whole thing, starting from your buttock all the way up to your forehead. By then you should be more calm, more peaceful. You have sati. Your mind is just calm and aware, very quiet. But this sati need to be stabilized. So a lot of people who don't have the understanding, they don't know how to do it. That's why they go and do all the methods and techniques of meditation without this understanding. They thought if they continue to note the rising and falling or do anapanasati, they are developing the meditation. No. This is just a skillful means to train your mind to anchor the heedless thinking mind from wandering off. That's why the object of meditation is to for you, is for you to anchor your thought, your mind, so that it is not in a state of thinking, so that it is not lost in thought. So what you can do is, if you are familiar with whatever object of meditation, you go to the object of meditation, silence your mind and detect the movement, and just silence everything and just develop awareness of the object of meditation, so that your sati can stabilize until it becomes very quiet, very still and very subtle, until the abdomen movement like stop. For those who are doing anapanasati, it's the same. You silence your mind, maintain awareness in front of your nostril, then just allow it to detect the breathing. Naturally, it will come to you, because your breath will go in and go out naturally. Then the moment the awareness detect it, you follow the instruction of the Buddha. Breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware. So this is how you train. Then every time the mind wanders off, it is not developing the awareness of the in and out breath, then you will have to bring the attention back to your breathing. Be patient. Train it this way. Diligently, within a matter of minutes, it will settle down. When it settles down, the anapanasati will transform your mind to become very quiet and very peaceful. Because when you are just aware without thought, you will experience the spiritual calmness, piti. Then you continue to relax into it. The piti become more refined and you experience what they call blissfulness of mind, sukhang. Then you continue to allow the anapanasati to go on, relax into every mind state that arises, silent everything, until this anapanasati become very quiet, very still, like no more breathing. Then don't do anything, silent everything and be with the subtle breathing. Later on, the mind will enter sati. Then you will be able to be mindful of all the subtle movement of every part within your body. That's why by then, if you move to your heart area, you're just silent. You can detect all the vibration there, especially your heartbeat. You don't need a stethoscope. It becomes very clear. Initially, it's like very cross pounding, pupa, pupa, and that. But never mind. Just relax into it, allow it to be silent. Then for those whose spiritual faculty are still not stable, if your mind is still not calm, not peaceful, not able to be aware most of the time, you realize there are thoughts they arise and they pass away. Never mind. Let it be. Do not create any dislike or aversion towards that thinking, the heedless thinking. They are the result of your lack of fine spiritual faculty. So this mental hindrance will come. Restlessness of mind, heedless thinking, they will surface. Mental hindrance, there are five. First two is a pair, sensual desire and ill will. Third one is lethargic mind, sloth and torpor, sleepy mind. The fourth one is restlessness of mind, born of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. When you have problem, this mind become restless and heedless. Then the last one is doubt. When you are not sure, you will have doubt. Then your mind is not calm, not composed. So the doubt will bring about the lack of faith. Then this mind cannot meditate. These are all mental hindrances. Okay, I will just let you meditate on your own, based on this understanding. Then later on, when the half an hour is up, the alarm will sound. Then I will ring the bell 3 times. Then you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Then we can continue with our second session. Okay. Okay, for those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who already had enough, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states you need to develop in your daily life, so that the continuity of mindfulness, sati, is established, stabilize it. When your sati is there, you will be calm, you will be peaceful. And you need to stabilize this sati so that it's ever mindful, so that you can have the quality of mind to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, leading to heedfulness. The moment you are heedful in the midst of life, the Buddha said, you are guaranteed to become enlightened. The heedful never die. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Okay, so that is what you need to remember. Now page 6, turn to page 6 of the chanting book. We will do the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, Let the devas or the Inti come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the king of sage, which is heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching.
Samanta Chakvalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sadhammam Munira Sunantu Sagamokadam Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana
Sa Bhagavato Sa
sanggo ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaneyo anuterang punyaketang lokasati sadu sadu sadu. Okay, we will pay respect to Pajama Budang Pujayami Damang Pujayami Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention or attentiveness. Then we will continue with our second session. Second session for Thursday class is different. It's reporting of meditation followed by question. Whatever question related to meditation or the teaching. And also how to apply the teaching or whatever you have learned to help you understand life and live life beautifully. Okay, you just have to put up your hand if you want to report your meditation or ask any question. Whatever you don't understand, you can. Anybody? Nobody? Ayo, so shy. As usual, very quiet. So what do you want me to speak on? Do you have any topic? Again, quiet. Means you want me to suggest a topic. But because there are new people, I think these new people are very new to our class. So they may not be able to follow what we have done over the years. So maybe today is just like a refresh, a revision for you all. We will start off by developing the understanding of the teaching. Maybe we put the topic, they like this word roadmap. Roadmap to understanding the Buddha's teaching. Is this topic okay? Okay, or is it too easy? Because a lot of people don't understand. We are on the way here. There is a lady, Lim Le Yong. She is new to Thursday class, but she came to my Tuesday class before. Then from the question she asked me since Tuesday class and today, I realized a lot of things she was not exposed to, that's why not easy for her to understand. So that gave rise to the condition for me to choose this topic. Unless you report your meditation, then I got no choice. I have to answer your question. Okay, roadmap to understanding. The Buddha's teaching. Maybe this is a good discussion topic. It also can maybe refresh your understanding. So basically, why do you study Dhamma? Why do you attend all these classes? Can we start from there? You want to understand what? The teaching first, isn't it? True or not? If you don't understand the teaching, you cannot meditate. You know? A lot of people say, but I want to become enlightened. I want to learn meditation. So straight away they want to go into meditation. But they don't even know the teaching. Like just now, I purposely, the whole of the session, the only thing is I almost use up the half an hour to give you the instruction. But this is recorded, very useful. It is a very, very complete summary. A lot of you all doesn't know what method and technique are. And sometimes you become gullible when people tell you, you do this type of meditation, they call it vipassana. That word vipassana is like very special. You get yourself very excited over that word. So actually vipassana has two parts. One is vi. The first part is vi. Then pasana. We stands for the three universal characteristics of nature. Anicang, dukkang, anatta, which is the core teaching of the Buddha. He said, if you want to really become enlightened, you must insight into these three universal characteristics. Anicang, dukkang, anatta is a Pali word. Anicang is impermanent. Dukkha is suffering or unsatisfactoriness. Then third one is anatta, empty nature or existence or non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. So this we is a very unique word. And these three universal characteristics of nature according to the Buddha is a universal characteristic that is inherent in all things, all phenomena. Everything that you come to experience in life, they have this three universal characteristics. That's why for a cultivator who has awakened or become enlightened, this universal characteristic, which is part of the truth that the Buddha talked about, this universal characteristic, they are everywhere in the midst of life and nature. That's why I always use this word. Truth is everywhere. The universal characteristics of nature is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see, because they are everywhere. So this is the uniqueness of his teaching. Then pasana is to insight into. That's why you combine these two words, means you are developing a type of meditation which will allow you to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature, which means you can become enlightened. But what a lot of people don't understand is this vipassana cannot be practiced. You don't go and quote me, otherwise people will come after me. If you really understand, you will know why vipassana cannot be practiced. Because pasana, there's an A. Why nobody saw this? What is pasana? Pasana is to insight into, isn't it? Insight into is not a knowledge, you know. When you insight knowledge is wisdom. No? You understand? Means with the penetrative wisdom, you insight into the three universal characteristics. Means you have to awaken to the three universal characteristics. And only the silent mind, which is beyond thought, beyond mind, can insight into phenomena. So you go and do all the meditation using thought-based, using thought, you can never insight into the three universal characteristics. You can never awaken. But the awakening is from the true mind, the silent mind. That's why a lot of people don't understand all this. They thought the method, the technique, is the vipassana. No. Whatever you develop, you can arise the wisdom that allow you to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature, that itself is vipassana. And that one is not a method and a technique. It's how you cultivate, how you train your mind, how you develop the silent mind, how you can really awaken insight into the three universal characteristics. And the steps involved in cultivation, the Buddha has actually laid them down very clearly. He said there are three steps in cultivation. First, you have to develop pariyatti. What is pariyatti? Huh? What is pariyatti? Learning of the teaching. Like what I say, you have to learn the teaching. You must understand what the Buddha teach. What is his teaching? So learning of his teaching. Or we call it Dhamma. Dhamma is the Buddha's teaching. That's why we have Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha. And what is Dhamma? Dhamma is truth. That's why he teaches truth, reality, nature's law. All the truth or nature's law that governs life and existence, they become Dhamma. And this is the essential Dhamma of the Buddha. So you have to learn, learning of his teaching. Then second one is what? Phase two of the Dhamma. Patipatti is what? You put what you have learned into? Into practice. Means you cultivate the teaching. So that you can develop the enlightenment or the awakening. The third stage is what? So this is stage one. Then this is stage two, then stage three. Stage three is Pativeda. And what is Pativeda? Fruition of your hard work. Fruition of your hard work. Means you get to live the life of an enlightened being. And this is the most rewarding phase of your life. Stage three. Or they call phase three. Stage or phase. Phase one of Dhamma, actually can be phase also. Phase one of Dhamma, or stage one of Dhamma. Then phase two, phase three. So now we come to phase one first. The learning of his teaching. What did the Buddha teach? Why is this teaching so special? Just now I already explained. Who is the Buddha first? Who is the Buddha? He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And how does he develop the enlightenment? He cultivated over a period of four asankhaya kappas. Do you know how long is it or not? Four world cycles. And the world cycle is very, very long. Billions and billions and billions of existence. One world cycle is like our universe, our present universe. When it arises, sustain itself, then it goes through the expanding phase. Then it goes through the decaying phase. Then it ceases to be. Even our planet Earth, just one of the planet, not even including all the other star system, everything. Our planet already more than 10 billion years. And this is not even one phase or one quarter of a world cycle. So world cycle is very long. So he has cultivated over eons and eons and eons of life to perfect his understanding. That's why he is very unique. And he is able to perfect himself until he become the fully enlightened one. That's why we call him the Sammasambuddha. He's not only a Buddha. He is the Sammasambuddha, fully enlightened, perfect in all aspects. So he has perfection in virtue and wisdom. You can say he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to arise in this universe. So to have him, such a great being, to be our teacher, what must you have? You must have great. What must you have? Gratitude and respect towards such a great being, isn't it? That's why your faith, your sadha, your gratitude is there. And this teaching that he has given us, because of his aeons and aeons of perfection and understanding, he was able to summarize all of his teaching into just four beautiful noble truths. That's why he called it the Four Noble Truths. And this Four Noble Truths is very, very unique. Why are they called Noble Truths? Not ordinary truth or ultimate truth or special truth. Noble truths are truths that can make you noble ones. During the time of the Buddha, an enlightened being is a noble one. Why? Because enlightened beings are very noble in all aspects of their life. They have noble qualities. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path are all the noble characteristics of an enlightened being. They have right view, which is wisdom, right understanding. Then they can only arise right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And these are perfect virtue, incapable of negativity. Then they constantly arise the four right effort to purify, the right effort to prevent the arising of unwholesome state of mind, maybe action, speech, or thought. Then the right effort to abandon those negativity of action, speech, and thought that has already arisen. Then the right effort to cultivate all the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood that is still not in you. Means all the virtue, all the wholesomeness, the goodness. Then the last one is the right effort to purify, to refine upon and perfect all this virtue, goodness, and wholesomeness. Then after that, they are ever mindful because they have this power factor of mindfulness. Then they have samadhi. Sati and samadhi will allow them to constantly live the noble life of an enlightened being because they are ever mindful, constantly meditative. And because of that, wisdom keep on arising and their right view is very, very stable. That's the reason why the Four Noble Truths is very unique. These are truths that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones. So when you understand that his teaching is so wonderful, so important, because it brings about great transformation in the living being, not only you can become more virtuous, more kind, more generous, more loving, more compassionate, but it has another component, which is wisdom, that can enable you to confront life, live life without suffering, without having any problem. That's the uniqueness of his teaching. That's why his teaching is very, very important. And because of that, the moment I came to know his teaching, 1979, I went all out to cultivate this teaching. I never turned back. Because to me, if you want to come to this world, existential world, you better come with all this understanding. Otherwise, you are miserable. You will be afflicted. You will have a lot of suffering and misery. So this is what this teaching is all about. And the Four Noble Truths I have already just now briefly mentioned, but now we can go into it deeper. The Buddha said there is a first Noble Truth that expounded the prevalence of suffering. He said suffering or dukkha is everywhere in this world. And there are 8 conditions can bring about suffering. If you don't have the understanding of his teaching, the wisdom that he has taught us. So what are these 8 realities? He said the first 4, as Chinese, I think, we always hear about this. But most Chinese don't like these 4 things. Birth, old age, sickness and death. Yeah. They like the opposite 4. What are the opposite 4? What are the opposite 4? They don't want to die. They want long life. Yeah? They don't want to get sick. What do they want? Healthy life. Yeah? Yeah? Don't want to get old. Means always young, handsome or pretty. That they don't want to be born. Why? They said, too much problem. The moment you are born, you have to go through what? Old age, sickness and death. And this is what the Buddha said, these are reality of life, you cannot escape. That's why the deluded mind want the opposite 4. But is it possible? It's not possible. And the Buddha actually went in search for all this answer. Do you remember why he left the palace life? Yeah? As a prince, he has very good life in there. He has the 4 seasons, the 4 palaces. And he has the best of everything. And yet, when he saw the 4 signs, he decided to give up all this and go in search of answers to all this. So how does he finally won over this search? The first sign he saw is what? Yeah? The 4 sign. An old, weak man who is so fragile, so weak, so old, so haggard, full of disease. So, old age, he doesn't understand. He asked the attendant, who is this person? How come he is like that? Then the attendant explained to him, oh Lord, he said, this is an old man. What do you mean by an old man? He said, everybody has to become old if you live long enough. Then the Buddha asked, do you mean one day I also become like him if I live long enough? He said, yeah. Then he said, whatever he experienced at the palace is not real. Because finally he has a problem. He will become old. Then he saw the sick man, so sick, so full of disease and all things. He said, you mean one day this body of mine also will be subject to all this. Then he knew he has a problem. Then the third one, he saw a dead man. He said, you mean this body of mine also must die? Then he cannot take it anymore. He said, I have a problem. All these are not real, impermanent. We are finally, I still got no answer to getting old, getting sick and die. Then the last sign he saw is what? A monk, samana, very calm, very serene. Then he asked the attendant, who is he? He said, this is the person who searched for answer to the first 3. That's why he wanted to follow him. He decided to renounce the world. And he became an ascetic. Then how did he meditate and awaken? Huh? He meditated and awakened because he realized this form and mind, the so-called human being, because we are born as human, huh? That's why we have a human body and a human mind. Yeah? So this is the human being. Yeah. So we have a physical body. Physical body. And we have a mind. Yeah? Or physical form. Then we have a mind. After he meditated, he realized this human being is not him. This human being that gets sick, gets old, and finally dies, and that means this mind, which is consciousness, just separate from the physical form. Then he became enlightened. Then he said, my problem, no more. That's why his first noble truth is very powerful, the final summary. What is the final summary? The Buddha said, in short, it is these five aggregates of grasping that give rise to suffering. This five grasping aggregate born of self-delusion, where you think this one is you. You think every experience that you come to experience through the mind, the consciousness, is real. And this is the secret of his success, his awakening. He just realized this, and he awakened to the truth. That this five aggregate of form and mind is empty, non-self, impermanent, lead to suffering. It has the universal characteristic that this is condition arising, causal phenomena. And this one is karmically conditioned out for each and every one of us to come to this existential world, to experience karma, to experience life, to live life, to develop the cultivation and all those things. Yeah. And this is our vehicle and tool to come. And this is a very important understanding. That's why with this understanding, the Buddha has no more problem. That's the reason why he introduced this teaching to the world. Yeah. So apart from the first four, birth, old age, sickness and death, he also has four more reality that complete the whole of life. He said the fifth reality is when there is separation. When there is separation from loved ones, your possession, your prized possession or things that you are holding on to dearly. So this separation, when it happens, it haunts the living being. It will cause you a lot of suffering, a lot of misery. So when it comes to separation, the Buddha actually gave it very deep understanding. Because in life, now we are in the modern society. So what you have to reflect on is, what are the conditions that can give rise to separation? First, separation from loved one. How does it happen? Yeah? Ah, death is one of them, isn't it? Then what else? Divorce. When relationship failure, when you don't like each other anymore, what happened? Huh? You seek divorce, isn't it? Then the spouse that is being cheated or jilted, or the girlfriend or boyfriend that has been jilted, will become miserable, isn't it? So all this is reality of life and existence. Then separation can be very, very traumatic, especially if you have children and it involves your in-laws, your parents, your wealth, your property. You're too rich, also your problem. You have to give away a lot of your wealth. Then all the dirty linen will be out in the public when you go for a court case and you don't want to settle all this. Then what else? What are the conditions for separation? Sometimes there is forced separation. How did it happen? War. Nature's disaster, like Highland Tower. Then sometimes kidnap also lead to separation. Of course, that is part of death. Then sometimes because of circumstances, you are forced to give away your children because of poverty, or sometimes because of war or whatever. Then you get separated from them. So separation can happen in many ways. This is only loved one. But what about your possession, your wealth, your property, your investment? During economic crisis, during nature's disaster, sometimes the whole of your wealth can be wiped off overnight, just gone like that. When you make the wrong call, when you make a wrong decision, when you don't take care of your karma, it may just happen. Then your career, you can get a love letter one day and just lost your job like that. You may be very successful, highly paid, but you depend on the paycheck. Once the paycheck is withdrawn, especially politically appointed people, overnight they lost everything. Then last time you have heard of this Iraq and Kuwait war. Iraq overnight decided to attack Kuwait and take over the whole country, including the central bank. The Kuwaiti all overnight lost everything. But they got good karma. What do? They go and see the Americans. They say, if you bring back my sovereignty, I can agree on whatever. They got a lot of oil. That's why the US went and had the war with Iraq and liberate Kuwait. So sometimes all these are dependent originating condition. When condition no more, overnight you lost your sovereignty, you lost your citizenship, you lost your wealth, you even lost your whole central bank. Can you imagine? If one day Malaysia kena like that, sometimes you don't need to have war to experience that. If G14 you all don't win, we may be in similar condition, if not worse, I also don't know. So all these are possible conditions for separation. But because most of us, our karma not bad, that's why we have this good condition. Then there is also what they call the sixth one. When you are with people whom you don't like. You know who are the people whom you don't like? Ladies will know. The first one they think of is our mother-in-law. Most difficult, but not so difficult compared to step-parent. Stepmother, stepfather. Then sometimes, often, you are in the orphanage. If your karma is such, you can be subject to a lot of abuses. So sometimes they have to go through this type of thing, child abuse. Then they have to confront people whom you don't like. And nowadays I realize career problem is the worst. A lot of young people have career problem. They came and talked to me. They came and see me. They say, Brother, they have to confront such difficult bosses. And what is the fear? Fear of losing that job. fear of being sacked, publicly reprimanded. And nowadays, bosses, they are not the friendly title. They are all very demanding. Sometimes they used to have this saying, they manage, they use management by fear and harassment. They put fear in you and they harass you until the last drop of juice also come out. Because they say they pay you. So they harass you, they give you a deadline. So you don't know how to handle such thing. You don't have the Dhamma. You can be afflicted, miserable. Then the first four, we haven't really touched on it. Birth can also be very traumatic. If there is complication during birth, what happens? The mother's at risk, the child life at risk. Then when there is complication, it can be very traumatic, very serious. Then as you go through life, you experience disease, sickness. And nowadays there are a lot of traumatic disease. What are they? Huh? Very common one. What are they? Cancer, number one. Then heart attack, stroke, HIV. Some more? Depression, of course. Mental depression, anxiety, fear, panic attack, a lot. Then human being cannot take stress, understand? So they, when they are subject to stress, they develop a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. Then they have this phobia trapped inside. Scars of memory, insecurity. All this is very traumatic. Then when they are confronted with financial problem, it's the same. True or not? When you grow old, you need to spend money. When you get sick, you need to spend money. When you die also, you need to spend money. So everything is about money. If you don't have the good karma, you cannot sustain yourself with a good financial position. It's not easy to live life, to confront life. And a lot of people find it very difficult to survive after they retire. Maybe for a few years, they can survive quite well with their EPF or whatever saving. But after that is drained, if they don't know how to grow their money, if they don't know how to invest or protect their wealth, then they will have to face financial problem. So financial problem, relationship problem, health problem, career problem, these are all the problems of life that can bring about suffering. And this is what the Buddha meant by the first noble truth reality of dukkha. Suffering is everywhere, prevalence of suffering. You don't know this teaching, you cannot handle. But if you understand this teaching, all this is no more a problem. These are reality that happen to everyone, not only you. That's why when you understand that this is a common reality for mankind, you are not alone in this world, then you know how to confront them with wisdom, understanding. Then you can free. You can liberate your mind and go beyond. Then you have the wisdom born of this meditative understanding that the Buddha teach. The form and mind is not you. He no me, he no you. This one is subject to karma, subject to birth, old age, sickness and death. But your true nature is very beautiful. It has eternal life. It's never born. That's why it never dies. It never have to go through all its sickness and death. That's why your mind can liberate. You can laugh at the dead because you know this is not you. These are unreal. The phenomenal world of consciousness is unreal. Impermanent, lead to suffering, empty, non-self. These are the understanding that we need. to liberate the mind. Then you can realize your true mind, your true nature. Then you realize that one is so beautiful. That one is the unconditioned, which is beyond all this. And that one can go above, transcend life, transcend everything within the conditioned world. So this is the reason why this teaching is very beautiful. Then the Buddha said, the seven realities when your expectation in life are not met, when you cannot get what you want, suffering comes about. When things don't go your way, you expect to be promoted, somebody else get promoted. Then what happened? You become full of envy, jealousy, unhappiness. That is what suffering is all about. Then you expect your spouse to remember your birthday, or your brothers and sisters to understand you, to love you, to help you. Then when something happened to you, they are not around. Then how do you feel? I have a few people who are depressed came and talked to me. He said, Brother Teo, after what happened, they go through first noble truth reality. Some of them hit by more than one of the reality, two or three, and very traumatic. One of the lady, the mother died when she was quite young. She was still a college student. Then later on, boyfriend left her, traumatic her. But because of Dhamma, she turned around beautifully. Then we have a lot of other example and situation. Because they have this expectation and they came and tell me, say, Brother Teo, when the husband is very successful, managing director of a main board listed company, suddenly just heart attack, die at the age of 60 something, and the wife cannot take it. That's why finally people, the condition brought him to see me and I explained the Dhamma. Then she recovered very beautifully. And in her own words, you know what she told me? She said, Brother Teo, first noble truth reality, noble truth of suffering, no need to explain. I know it inside out. Because she was in depression for 3 years after the husband died. Very traumatic. Then because of the understanding, she turned around and she became more happy. Because I told her it's a blessing in disguise. Without this thing happening, you don't have condition to meet up with the Dhamma. You cannot understand all this. And this one, money cannot buy. Not only this life, all your future life, you will benefit from it. Then he said, yeah. That time, the reason why he went into depression is because he said when she was at home, everything she saw remind her of her husband. You can understand that very easily there. Everything they buy together, they travel together, the photo, the album, the computer thing, and even the art and all those things they buy, where they can afford, they travel all over the world. Everything reminds them of the good moments and all those things. Then when all these things happen, suddenly life like completely destroyed. Then she had this thought telling her, without my husband, I am nobody, I am nothing. All the what they call the husband's social friends, contact, the Dato, the Tan Sri and all those things, they will not drop by anymore. Then that fear project, that's why I went into depression. Her life is going to be very bad, very miserable. Then later on he saw some of his friends came and see her. Then again the thought project, you know what the thought project? The thought tell her, see? Your brother, your sister also never come. Instead, your friend come. And he started to develop the hatred towards the brother and sister. This is expectation, understand? When your expectation in life is not met, the wrong thought is crazy, full of delusion, illusion. That's how people who are very strong in their character, very successful in their life, when they are hit with the first noble truth, they really cannot take it. They like paralyzed. And you know what she told me a lot? Went to psychiatrists. So many. Take medication. Doesn't help. Suicidal thought everywhere. Then at certain stage, you even complain. Why is my husband like that? Left me alone. Left so fast. So all these are the thoughts telling her. That's why when she understand the Dhamma, then she came out, she walked out of it. I told her these are reality. You like it or not, happened already, gone already. You go and project your thought, cling and hold on to all this, no use. This is what the Buddha meant by attachment to the five aggregates of form and mind. Leads to suffering, dukkha. And what are the five aggregates she attached to? Huh? First one is what? Huh? No, that one is the senses. The first aggregate. Ah, the husband. Understand all? The five aggregate form and mind of the husband. Then after that, he attached to what? The feeling and the sensation and the emotion that arise. You understand all? She felt so miserable. So full of sorrow and lamentation. And all these are wrong thoughts that condition all this nonsense. This one Eric will know. All of your fear, worry, anxiety, phobia, and this can cripple you. It can lower your immune system and make you miserable. And you are not strong in your karmic inheritance. You may get cancer and other things. Depression is very common. Then what happens is, as you go through life, you start to see more and more of these things happening to the world, to fellow living beings. And what she shared with me was so beautiful, because I can relate them all. That's why now I share with you all, is because she told me all these things. She said, came home, everything he see, they're not stay in the bedroom, worse. Everything bring back that memory. So the aggregate that he attached to, not only the form, to the feeling, to the memory, understand not? What is memory? Sankara. The mental states, the good time that they have. Yeah. Then to all the conscious moment that she able to recall to the memory. So all the five aggregate, Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, she attached, she clinged. That's why she became miserable, tormented. Cannot free. Not until she met me, then I help her. You know how I help her? I never ask her to meditate. I just talk to her about life. I said, your life, you hold the key to your own life destiny. Why are you so miserable? Why are you not happy? Because each and every one of us, we hold the key to our own life destiny. True or not? To be happy or to be unhappy is entirely your choice. Eh? You can choose. Eh? Don't tell me you don't know how to choose. Choose to be happy. But why are you not happy? Eh? Why are you not happy? Because they don't have the Dhamma. They attach and cling. It's like they hold on to this. Huh? Let's say this is red hot, molten, burning. If you attach, hold on to this, what happens? It will burn you, torment you. Isn't it? True or not? Make you miserable. Isn't it? And you know what they tell you? This is my problem, Lord. How can I not hold on to it and worry about it? I say, there are two things you can do. You hold on to it, worry about it, and become miserable over it, which is a common mistake of most humanity and human beings. This one is stupidity. You don't know how to choose. You choose to be miserable. Understand? If you continue to do that, you know what your life is. You have been in that state for 3 years. Do you want to come out? You want to come out very easy. Don't hold. Don't hold means what? It's not burning me, tormenting me, and causing me problem. Understand? But don't hold doesn't mean the problem is gone, no. You understand or not? You need wisdom to come out of it, though. let's say financial problem, you can never go and tell this guy, hey, all these are not real, no, impermanent, no, lead to suffering, no, empty nature, non-self. He said, the hell with you. Understand? No? Financial problem is financial problem. Health problem is health problem. How can you tell me all these are not real? These are as real as it can be. Then why did I say, don't hold? Don't hold means what? Develop the wisdom that the Buddha has taught us. What did the Buddha taught us? Learn to see things as they are. Yeah, these are first noble truth reality. Not only you are confronted with it. It's a common reality for all of humanity. So if it's a common reality, then why do you worry? The only difference between one who suffer and one who don't suffer is the one who suffer doesn't know this teaching. Doesn't know how to deal with it. The one who doesn't suffer has the wisdom, has the understanding of the teaching, and he know how to deal with it. So what I'm trying to tell all these people is, I say, very simple. Don't hold means what? Don't deludedly cling onto that thought, understand now? That thought is not your friend. Because you are not enlightened. You have delusion. When you have delusion, you create wrong thought. Then I tell them what is wrong thought. All of your anger, hatred, phobia, insecurity, all this rubbish. These are all wrong thought. Then she write it down. Then she realized these are all the things that she has been thinking. And it has become like a cocoon of thought. Keep on repeating like a tape recorder inside her brain. That's why she cannot come out. Huh? This one, Eric will laugh. He gone through. And he also came out very fast. You ask Eric. So when you understand all this, then you realize these are all wrong thought. So what must I do? I have to accept that these are reality of life and existence. Death is a reality. Happened already. So what? If I accept means I no need to fear. I no need to worry. I no need to have all this wrong thought. I tell myself, I have to move on. I have my life. Why must I allow this to ground me and make me so miserable? If I do that, means I don't love myself. You can understand, huh? You don't love yourself. Don't think negatively. Huh? A lot of people say, hey, crazy, I love yourself. There is an English word in there. What is the word? When you love yourself. But not in that sense. Means you fall in love with yourself. You understand? With the image that you see on the mirror. Of this thing. Not that type of love. The love. What is it? Oh. No. Not that one. Never mind. What I try to explain to you is, you see, loving yourself means you ask yourself, we have been parents before, even those not married also you will know. If you love somebody, of course not the boyfriend and girlfriend type, that one can lead to hatred, jealousy and all those things. That one is different type of love. When you genuinely love somebody, especially your children, or your brothers, your sister, or your parent, what will you do? You will go all out to protect them, is it? To provide for them and sacrifice for them, is it? And do whatever you can, is it? So that they are not harmed. So that they can have the good life. That is loving somebody whom you really love. Understand? So loving yourself means what? You do the same. Do not allow yourself to be miserable, unhappy, afflicted. But what are you doing? You are using the thought wrongly. The thought is your tool, beautiful tool. You use it to cut yourself, harm yourself, hurt yourself like a knife, make yourself so miserable. And that is the wrong way of using your thought. Do you understand? That's why you better wake up. Well, this thought is like a tool, T-O-O-L, for us to use. And it's like a knife. And what is a knife? help you to cut vegetable, cut fruit, shape things, yeah, that are useful. But if you use that knife foolishly to cut yourself, harm yourself, hurt yourself, and hit others, is that the right way of using that knife? You are causing a lot of karmic repercussion. You understand? But precisely the person who is in depression, suffering, mind state, they are doing that to themselves. Using the thought wrongly to harm themselves, to hurt themselves, and make themselves so miserable, so depressed, so unhappy. And when you see this, you better wake up and learn to love yourself. Love yourself means you will never allow yourself to go through this misery, this suffering. And this is what the First Noble Truth is all about. The Buddha said in the Second Noble Truth, the cause of suffering is attachment, craving, clinging, grasping to the five aggregate of form and mind. And this is what you have been doing, living being has been doing. So when I know the cause, I can reverse it. Yeah. These are reality of life and existence. What happened is the First Noble Truth reality. Why can't I accept it? Then my thought got no power over me. Cannot project, cannot do all those things, cannot torment me because I'm not holding on to it. Understand not? I'm accepting it. I tell myself. I do not perceive what happened. Take for example the husband that passed away. I do not perceive it with negativity anymore. Sorrow, lamentation and sadness anymore. Why? Because death is a reality. Separation is a reality. So I accept the reality. Means, no matter what I do, this is a reality. I have to start from this understanding to free my mind. So if I accept means I am at peace. True or not? And I have right view with regards to law of karma. So I perceive whatever happened as a reality, then I use it to turn myself around. Then I reflect. This is karma. Because my husband's time is up. Maybe he has a mission somewhere. He has to go and do something for somebody or help people elsewhere. For me, even without him, I have the means to survive because he left behind a lot of things. Understand not? So if I perceive it with wholesomeness, then I can accept this reality and tell myself, maybe it's a blessing in disguise. If this thing won't happen, I won't question life because everything is too good. She agreed with me. I say, if this thing don't happen, do you think you will come to Dhamma class? Listen to Dhamma. He said, no, no way. Because they can travel all over the world. And every year, they can afford a lot of things. And life was so beautiful, so good. And they get to know so many great people, wealthy people, of all types of classes. And they are also quite simple. So because of that, she starts to understand. Then when she starts to understand, she turns around beautifully. Then every time the wrong thought comes, the right effort to abandon and prevent it from arising straight away arises. She said, enough. Torment me long enough already. My life, I decide. I'm not going to think of all this. Then he can accept everything that happened in the house. From that onward, no more. The reality is, he's gone. Finished. Then I say, you want to do something to help him in return? You can, the Buddhist way. Make donation under your husband's name. Understand not? Make offering. Then, share merit, transfer merit. Wish him all the best in all his future life, future endeavor. Then if you really want to help him more, you can invoke power, merits and all those things. Yeah. Then develop the joy, the understanding, the happiness. Yeah. Then perceive it with wholesomeness. It's a blessing in disguise. Otherwise, I cannot know this teaching. Yeah. And now she is so beautiful. And it has happened over 10 years ago. See? And people recover so well. And this is all because of Dhamma. After that, the drugs that she received from the psychiatrist, all those things, she asked me, need to take or not? I say, up to you. He said, it's like, without the drug also, no problem already. At first, he reduced the dosage. Then I said, you can give it out. They really give it out. A few of them give it out, and nothing happened. Because when you are on that type of drug, sometimes it is a tranquilizer to make you have the ability to sleep. Otherwise, they have this, what they call insomnia. They cannot sleep because of the wrong thought, the depression, and all those things. Then as they recover, all this subside. Their mind state become more calm. Last time she cannot sleep, hardly sleep. And now you know what she told me? She can sleep very well. Since about 6-7 years ago, he said, can sleep very well, relatively. He said, because now no more of this type of thought come and haunt her. Yes, she understand. The reality is, he's gone. And all this happened because of a reason. Blessing in disguise. I said, it's time for you to turn to the Dhamma already. Then she understand that she has a lot of affinity with my nature. That's why she was very, very happy. And she just came out of it. Then people with disease signal also same. I say, you got two choices. Let's say cancer, okay? Biopsy result come out positive. So what are you going to do? You got again two choices. First, project your thought, worry about it and panic. And do all the stupid thing and make yourself miserable. That is one way, which most people without the Dhamma will do. Now that you have the Dhamma, why can't you accept it as a reality? Then what must you do? You need to ask for a second opinion, ask for a second opinion. But the moment I accept this reality and I accept karma as the cause, then I can free my mind. Then I can make use of whatever I understand to turn things around. Then I perceive all this wholesomeness. Then I tell myself, this is a blessing in disguise. Without this disease, I cannot cultivate the first noble truth, second turning. You know what is the first noble truth, second turning? This noble truth of dukkha or suffering is to be understood. You don't know how to understand. Understand? Then with clarity of mind, with understanding, no more thought projection, no more fear, worry, anxiety, you are peaceful. You have clarity. That's why you can act. Act with what? Act with wisdom. Acting according to wisdom or understanding is true action. You don't go and act according to memory. Because that is not acting at all. Because memory has all the rubbish inside there. Your scars of memory, your fear, your phobia, your unhappy moments, your misery, your sorrow and your lamentation, and your insecurity. Everything is there. The insecurity comes from your mind that wants to be safe. And you have so much craving, desire. You want things your way. And when things don't go your way, you react out of it. You become miserable. That's why you lack peace. You lack confidence. You lack love. You lack compassion. You lack this understanding in you. You don't have right view. And all these are due to self-delusion. So memories are your accumulation of experiences, good and bad. And most of the people carry the negative one. Your fear, your worry, your anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, phobia, and all those insecurities. Your unhappy moments. Especially scars of memory, which you recall. So these are the Dhamma way that you can use conducively to free your mind. Then when you reflect, do I have the right understanding? Do I love myself? Do I deludedly create all this suffering unnecessarily? Then when you understand all this, you start to reflect, contemplate, and you start to write it down. then you will become different. Then you realize actually suffering need not be. Suffering is something you create through your own thought, through your own self-delusion, wrong view, through your own ignorance that condition you to grasp, cling and worry about them. Then that worry is a projected fear. That's why it leads to all the sorrow, lamentation, then finally depression, panic attack and all those things. And this is what Dhamma is all about. So, coming back to the teaching, we so far have gone through the first Noble Truth and the second Noble Truth. But the third Noble Truth we haven't gone in. Yeah? So, the first Noble Truth, I finished the first seven. The last one is, the Buddha summarized all of suffering. He said, in short, it is due to our self-delusion that condition us to believe that this human being is real. And this is what we call the five aggregate of form and mind, the Buddha said. When you grasp and cling to all these five aggregates of form and mind, you will suffer. You will become miserable. So in the Mahayana tradition, or in Mandarin, it's called Wu Yun. Wu Yun, Jie Kong. The five aggregates are empty. So this five aggregate got two aspects. First aspect is as a human being, the Buddha said. As a human being, you have a physical body or a physical form. So this is your form, Rupang, Se Yun. Okay? Then you have a consciousness, mind. The Buddha said there are four aggregates of mind. You just have to inquire if you want to understand these four aggregates. What can my mind do? What can your mind do? Your mind can feel that you have the feeling aggregate, Vedana. Your mind can perceive things. That's why it has the aggregate of Sanya. Then your mind can arise mental thinking, mental activity, mental states, mental intention. And all the whatever that your mind can do is under Sankara. Even your planning, your scheming, your whatever thing that you want to do, that is under Sankara. Then the last aggregate is, your mind can be conscious. Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So the form aggregate together with the four mind aggregate of Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana give rise to the first aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind. And this one is a human being. And the Buddha said these five aggregates, they are dependent originating, condition arising. There are three conditions within for this human being to come to life. You can animate it. First, there must be a physical body that is functional. Means all the organ is still intact. No major organ having problem. Then secondly is, you have a consciousness trapped inside. This consciousness, yeah, is very important for you to arise the aggregates of mind. Then lastly is your karmic force, your life force. From your karmic nature, it comes and pumps your heart. That's why you have the heartbeat. And what is your heartbeat? That is your pulse of life. And we had a book. Yeah, I did a sharing on this book where somebody asked a question. What is the difference between the heart and the mind? And it's the blue book. After those who don't have, you can collect them. So the heart and the mind, they are two different things. So the heart is where the life force resides, seat of consciousness. So when the life force comes, it pumps your heart. That is your karmic force, supporting karmic force. And this one will trigger off that heart pumping process to send the blood to all your organs to nourish them. That's how you have life. If your karmic force no more, let's say suddenly destructive karma come. Life force gone. The heart stopped pumping. What happened? You say die. Who died? Nobody died. It's just this consciousness float out. The organ cannot support the consciousness that exists. Because no more oxygen, no more nourishment, the system shut down. Then this consciousness cannot stay inside, it will leave. It's just separation of the consciousness from the form. And sometimes the karmic force is there, the consciousness is there, but your spinal cord injured or your major heart attack. Again, it cannot sustain. The karmic force cannot be received. Again, the human being has to die. And we call this death. But actually, no one died. Who died? What died? What is death? That's why when you meditate, you can understand. All this will be very clear to you. And you can see clearly the aggregates. This is the first aspect as a human being. The second aspect is, the Buddha said, our mind has four aggregates. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, is it? But every time you perceive through Sanya, you bring the external form into the mind. Like the Buddha image. How do you know it? Through perception. You perceive it. Then this external form enters the mind. So the four aggregates of mind, together with the external form, become the five aggregates. And this is the Namarupa within the dwelling. And this is the one that the Buddha talked about. The mental five aggregate of form and mind. So the dwelling, Paticca-samubbada, has the first falling. Avijja-paccaya-sankara, first two. Sankara-paccaya-vijnana, mental consciousness. Then when you input the content of consciousness, it becomes nama-rupang. The content of consciousness is your perception, your sankara, and whatever the mind introduces. Your mental intention, everything. So this will trigger off the thought, which is the five aggregate of form and mind, second aspect. And that is the one that the Buddha teach, and the Buddha is interested in. And that is the one that can be meditated on and awaken the true mind, awaken the understanding for your form and mind to liberate, to awaken, to become enlightened. So this teaching is very unique and very beautiful. So this five aggregate of form and mind, when you meditate, when you understand, then you will not be deluded. You will not be deceived. You will not be like affected. Yeah. Then you will understand clearly what mind is all about. Why the Buddha say mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. And mind is just consciousness. And the phenomenal world of consciousness that we are living in is just consciousness, not real. They come and they go. They arise and they pass away. That's why they have this impermanent characteristic. And you attach, cling and hold and grasp to the aggregates. You suffer, you become miserable. And because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why it's not real, it's not you. Non-self, empty. Everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, no reality. As real as can be, is only the moment, the only reality in life. A split second is gone. How real can be the moment be? And all this understanding you will have as you meditate, as you develop the understanding, and you will awaken to all this. And this is the part that you need most. The first noble truth and the second noble truth. But this will explain to you all of the mundane aspect of life. When you understand the four noble truths, you understand life. Complete, both mundane and supramundane. So the first two noble truths is about the mundane aspect of life. And whatever you experience in life, you can translate them into the eight reality. Nothing is beyond them.
That's why the Buddha is very wise. This eight reality cover everything. You can tell me any aspect of life. I can explain to you why it's covered under this eight reality. It can never be beyond this eight reality. Yeah. That's why the first noble truth is like explaining to you the reality of life and existence, the mundane aspect. Then the second noble truth is to give you the understanding that there is a cause behind, so that you are not deluded. So when you understand the cause of your suffering, you can reverse it, yeah. You can do something about it, yeah. You can manage it better, yeah. That's why this teaching is very important. If you don't know what attachment is, what craving is, what self-delusion and ignorance is, then you cannot do anything. Then you will arise the wrong thought and get yourself entangled and become afflicted. And this is the first noble truth. Prevalence of suffering. Suffering is everywhere and you have to confront them every moment, every instant. But when you have the understanding, you can go beyond. That's why the Buddha under the third noble truth, he said, there is a third noble truth that can explain to you clearly that suffering need not be. You don't have to go through suffering. All this will not afflict you and affect you. The first noble truth. When you have the understanding of his teaching, when you know that this five aggregate of form and mind is unreal, the two aspects, then you have insight into phenomena to realize the three universal characteristics. Then all this understanding will liberate your mind. Then you get to live the third phase of Dhamma, the life of enlightened being, free of suffering, free of misery, unhappiness, or whatever. And you will have the good life, the noble life. So this is the beauty of this teaching. And this enlightenment can be realized. The Buddha said, there is such thing as the noble truth of Nibbana, enlightenment in the here and the now, cessation of form and mind. You can realize the unconditioned. And the Buddha said in the teaching, if it's not because of the existence of this supramundane state of the unconditioned, escape from the conditioned world is impossible. That's why Nibbana can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. And you don't have to wait till you die to realize that. So this is the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. Salvation is not promised to you after you die. That one could be quite dangerous. What happens after you die? That promise is not fulfilled. You better realize it before you die. Then later on you will come to know nothing die, no one die. That's why you're free. And you can really confront death with understanding. Like my teacher said, you can laugh at the dead. Means not somebody dying. No. You can die before your own form and mind die. You can have the understanding and laugh at the dead, means before this form and mind separate. The understanding can be there. So the fourth noble truth is what we are interested in, the cultivation part. Then the Buddha said there is a fourth noble truth, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. You cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. And that is the meditation. You meditate to become enlightened, isn't it? So that you are free of? Free of what? So, it's a Noble Eightfold Path, the meditation. He said, the Buddha promised you, there is this Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate it, it will bring about the end of all suffering. And that is the meditation. You still think the method and the technique is the meditation. After you have insight into phenomena, after you have realized vipassana, you still got to go back to Noble Eightfold Path. Do you know that? You still need to know what this form of mind is all about. What are the three right views? But his teaching is very easy, actually, very simple. The Buddha's teaching is about truth, nature's truth. He said when you understand his teaching, you understand life. You understand all aspects of life, both the mundane and supramundane. So to me, it's like you understand the secret of life. So when you understand the secret of life, you know how to live life. That's why the three right views are very important. the three spiritual right view. There are five nature's order that governs life and existence, the Buddha said, Pancha Niyama. The first two are scientific law, Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. Uttu are the nature's physical order. Bija Niyama is nature's biological order. And these two the scientists have penetrated quite deep, quite well. That's why they are able to come up with a lot of understanding and advances within our civilization. That's why we progress very fast over the last four decades. But the other three spiritual laws are equally important. Because this one involves life, existence. That's why the Buddha is, in a way, like the scientist, he understands these three spiritual laws, the right view, very clearly, very deeply. That's why he is the Sammasambuddha. So like the scientist, when you understand the three spiritual law, you become very wise in the spiritual field. And you can understand everything that happened within the spiritual field. That's why the first right view the Buddha teaches, Karma Niyama, the law of karma. And from there, his teaching come about. His advice to avoid all evil. Do good. Purify the mind. Come from that law of karma. But that law of karma in our five daily contemplation, essential Dhamma, the Buddha actually teaches this five daily contemplation to overcome the first noble truth and to understand the law of karma so that we can get this understood and cultivate correctly. He said, the first contemplation, actually the first three, are related to this physical body. He said this physical body of ours, every day you have to contemplate. It's of the nature to grow old, to get sick and die. For it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So now you understand. This body is not you, made of element, goes the way of nature. That's why it's subject to old age, sickness and death. And it's not you. So why you worry? But when you attach to this body thinking it's you, what will happen to you? You will worry about it, getting old, getting sick, and one day, die. That's how human beings become problematic. Human beings become deluded because they don't have the understanding. And it's very difficult to tell people, hey, this is not you. He said, the hell with you, not me. I want to run, I run. I want to laugh, I laugh. I want to cry, I cry. I want to commit suicide, also can. You say, not me. See? How are you going to answer them? Huh? Why don't you ask them another question? You think it's you? When you are paralyzed from the waist down, you ask the body to walk and see? Stand also cannot stand. Then is it you? So the analogy of the car and the driver is very good. What is a car? Car is a vehicle to take you around with it. So like this physical body, take you around. Who is the one that moves the car around? The driver, is it? So inside your body, there's an analogy. The consciousness is the one that drives you around on the sarah. This one decides where to go on the sarah. Then the body takes the instruction and go. Yeah. But like the car and the driver, you know very clearly, is it? Neither the car or the driver is you. Eh? Who are you? You are the owner. Yeah? You are the tauke that sit behind there. Correct? Or? So if there's any accident to the car, you worry or not? You suffer or not? You become miserable. Maybe your pocket suffer. You know? But physically, you are not entangled. Understand? Yeah. But mentally, you are entangled. Then the driver, you can see clearly. The driver is the driver. The car is the car. But when the two combine, you think it's real. You think it belongs to you. Alarm trigger already. I just finished out this part. So, in a similar way, you can understand. Then you realize, if the body is not me, if the consciousness trapped inside also not me, then who am I? What am I? You have a nature that is completely beyond this. And this one is the unconditioned. Your true nature. Your eternal nature. The unborn. That's why you meditate to realize that. Then your problem is no more. Like the Buddha underneath the Bodhi tree, he connect and he realized that and he awakened. Then there is no more fear of dying. Who died? What died? The form and mind is not you. They go the way of nature. But you have to be careful. This is subject to karma. That's why you have to understand. So like the car and the driver, the conditions are there, then they perform a function, then you can move it around. But let's say there is no petrol or some vital part of the car damaged. Can you drive the car? Even F1, Formula 1 champion also cannot drive the car. Understand? That's why these are conditioned arising entity. When the conditions are there, it performs a function, it's like it exists, real. But when conditions cease to be, it ceases to be. That's why they are not real, not you. When consciousness is out, this body goes the way of nature. That's why contemplation on death, you will understand all this. So these are the teachings which are very important, very comprehensive, and very beautiful. So law of karma is one of them. Then after that, the Buddha talked about separation. Whatever that you think you own, your loved one, your prized possession, your property, your wealth, whatever, they are dependent originating, condition arising. When condition is there, it appears like it belongs to you. But when condition is to be, it will separate from you. Either you separate from there first, or when conditions cease to be, they separate from you first. How do you separate from them? When your breath stops, your identity erased, you are gone. When you are gone, how can you own anything? That's why only the foolish people lament, the Buddha said. My son, my wealth, my property, my possession. This, the Buddha said, only the fools, F-O-O-L-S, lament. For that very body also doesn't belong to him. Wherein son, wherein wealth, wherein possession. So all these are very beautiful teaching. If you understand, you become beautiful. Then the last one he said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. This is the fifth contemplation, the last one. And this is related to the law of karma. So if you know your entire life depends 100% on karma, what must you do? We are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are every moment, every instant because of our karma. So we have to take care of karma so that karma can take care of our life. And how do we take care of karma? We have to follow the advice of the Buddha. That's why his advice is what? Avoid all evil. Do good. Purify. That's how the teaching come about. And how to avoid all evil? He teach you what? Just how we did at the opening puja. Keep your precept. That's how the teaching come. Then how do you do good? Cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action. Then how do you meditate? Right mindfulness and right samadhi. That's how you develop the cultivation. So this second part, developing the cultivation, is very easy when you understand the teaching. Then you couple with what I give you in the introduction just now, because the Buddha under Dhammapada was 21, 22, 23, and even before he died, his emphasis is only on heedfulness. And to be heedful, there are two parts. Ever mindful, plus constantly meditative, means cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. So to be ever mindful, you must train your mind to be mindful first. That is what meditation is all about. Nothing to do with method and technique. People who need method and technique because the spiritual faculty are not there. That's why the mental hindrance make them miserable. Then they need all the skillful means. Otherwise you don't need. Then when you have the mindfulness developed, stabilize it to make it ever mindful until you realize past sati, until the mind enters sati. And then in the midst of life, you have this quality of ever mindful, you can cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, and you are destined for enlightenment. And this is the complete understanding of the teaching and the cultivation. Okay? With this we end. I realize this part a lot of people don't understand. They don't have that understanding. And it's not easy to understand too. You realize a lot of cultivator or Buddhists, so-called Buddhists, they don't have a clear understanding of all this. They are just trying here and there. Go retreat, meditate, method, technique, vipassana, jhana, everything. But this understanding is lacking. So let us compose our mind. Then we will do the sharing of merit, transform merit. Then we will invoke blessing for the nation. Then you make your aspiration. Akasata cha bhumatha devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva sirang rakantu lokasa etta watta cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabbasampati siddhiya idang menya tidang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tidang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tidang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo devo asatu kalena sasa sampati hetu cha fito bhavatu loko cha Raja bhavatu dhammiko Imina punyang kamina Mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu Yava nivana patiya Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Buddha and all the worthy ones. Sadhu. Then we end. Christina sent me a question, but I don't have time to cover. He asked about the Mahayana teaching, the 9 type of consciousness. But just to make her happy, at least the first 8 I explained already. First until 8 consciousness. The 9 consciousness is actually the supramundane mind, the Buddha nature. They call it the 9 consciousness. Actually, that one is not a consciousness. That one is a nature. Then if you have any question, you are free to text Suyan so that next Thursday class we can
answer your question. Huh?